Visit Plain Ridge Park Casino this spring for all the playoff hoops and hockey action and the return of baseball. They've got the biggest screens, the best food and drink, plus they're giving away Penn Cash bonuses and prizes to Penn Play Rewards members. Not a member? Join today by downloading and registering for the Penn Play app from the App Store. Unlock all the fun, including a chance to win up to $2,000 in Penn Cash. All this and more. Make Plain Ridge Park Casino your spring sports viewing headquarters. Must be 21 plus. Play it smart from the start. Live chat at GameSenseMA.com. Hope is here. 800-327-5050 or GamblingHelplineMA.org.
B-Pod Studios.
Felger.
I don't know, guys. Am I going to play? Am I not going to play? What am I going to do?
Mass.
Yeah, Mass, you stupid. S-T-O-O. Stupid Mass.
It's time for Felger and Mass, presented by DraftKings on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I could tell when the most revealing thing was how he behaved in that press conference with the CBD company that he partnered up with. And he was talking about, really was the first kind of public statements we'd heard from Gronk since he retired, was in that press conference. And when he breaks down and he talks about losing the joy of football, it just struck me, so strongly right then and there. He wasn't talking about football. He was talking about Bill Belichick sucking the life out of him.
He was talking about Belichick sucking the life out of him. Good line.
The human leech.
So, Maz and I were both listening to TNR this morning, as you all should, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. On the web, too, your smartphone, 98.5 The Sports Hub. The app's a great product. Or just yell at your smart speaker thingy. Just say, Alexa, play 98.5 The Sports Hub. You'll get it. But Ted was on this morning with TNR and had some really, I thought, good insight into Gronk, because I think Ted's in Gronk's category, which is someone who has got this great worldview and this great attitude. You know, Ted's a great guy, right? And has this, you know, this great personality, and was in the Patriots system under Bill Belichick, and I think, like Rob Gronkowski, got ground down a little bit, and you know, wasn't a great, from a personality standpoint, wasn't a great fit between Belichick and Ted Johnson. Those two certainly, you know, had their back and forths over the years. So I think Ted can really commiserate and really relate to the way Rob Gronkowski felt. And I thought he expressed it pretty well this morning, Maz.
Absolutely. And also, let's not leave out the part that physically Ted took a beating the way Gronk did. So, I mean, all the elements were there. And I just thought, you know, to me, and again, Ted to me is one of those guys that who had to walk away from the game because of the beating he took. And I don't want to put words in his mouth, but to me, he's one of those guys that if I were him, I'd be agitated a little bit. Like, you went through that whole spiel about head trauma and everything else, and then a year later, you're back in the league. Like,
so he's not, he didn't say that today. He's not down on Gronkowski. He's down on Belichick.
No, I hear you. And I'm not telling you that. I think he's down on both if I had to guess, but again, I don't want to put words in Ted's mouth.
Well, they didn't get to that today. So, I mean, I don't know. Maybe you've spoken to him separately, but that wasn't part of the conversation that I heard.
No. The part about Belichick is true. Belichick wore Ted out just like he wore Gronk out. And you're talking about a guy who has an experience here of knowing what it's like to play with someone who just keeps pushing and pushing and pushing and eventually burns you out.
So I think Ted nailed, and this comment caught your ear too, Maz. He nailed what exactly the Patriot way is. What exactly is the Patriot way, Ted? Number four.
And I'm just not so sure that philosophy that Bill's kind of had, the Hardo philosophy, and not necessarily still being a great coach, but not being, you know, kind of a good with interpersonal skills. I'm not so sure that's going to, you know, be the best way to go about it in the next, you know, 10 to 20 years. So they're at a bit of a crossroads testing that theory, that quote unquote Patriot way. The Patriot way, in a nutshell, when you break it down, guys, is this: accept whatever Bill gives you. If Bill gives you an offer and a contract and you do not accept it, then you will be in his doghouse and you will not be part of what he even wants to do there. If you accept that contract, you don't fight it, and you accept whatever role it is, and you don't fight it, then you'll be part of, quote-unquote, whatever the Patriot way is. The players think I think are more empowered now. Player empowerment is bigger now than it's ever been. And that kind of butts up against how Bill has always been able to manage his football teams in the past.
That's the Patriot way, Maz.
Oh, totally. And that one did. That one stuck out to me right away. And I went, wow, how about that? The Patriot way is accept Bill's offer and do what he tells you and you'll be fine. Otherwise, you're in the doghouse. That's the Patriot way. Like, heaven forbid that you actually advocate for yourself. And so, to me, you know, and again, we all know how Bill runs it. And with most players, you can get away and do it that way. But eventually, you're going to come across a talent, and it's going to cost you a player, whether it's a quarterback or a defensive lineman.
It's totally true. It's totally the Patriot way. No. It's Bill's way. You do what he wants when he wants it, and then you're on the program. If you don't forget about what's best for the team. Because certainly he's made mistakes in the past where it's not best for the team, and he knew it wasn't best for the team, but it was best for him. And so that's the Patriot way. It's Belichick's way. Sorry, Murray.
Yeah, look how it played out with Malcolm Butler. You know, he put that offer in front of him going into that season, and Butler didn't think it was fair. So he ultimately, you know, kind of was on the outs throughout that whole season. We saw it play out, and then by the time it got to the Super Bowl, and there was maybe some other things going on there too, he just completely iced him out in the biggest game.
So,
I mean, look, and it's happened to a lot of guys, right? Welker's another one where Welker took the franchise offer, then showed up in camp. He signed the franchise tag, and then by week two or three, what are we hearing? Or a few weeks into the season, Edelman's passed him on the depth chart. Remember that one?
Sure.
Yeah.
So, like, I just think, and my big criticism of Bill on this isn't about, you know, how come you're playing this guy, you're not playing that guy. That's his job as coach. My criticism of Bill comes to the money side of it, where he says to his players, nope, you know, do you want to play football or do you want to make money? If that's true, then why should Bill be the highest paid coach in the league? I mean, if everybody's making financial sacrifices to win, then Bill should make financial sacrifices too, and I don't think he does.
So I think it's 100% right. It's 100% accurate. I also am not super bothered by it. It's got to be the coach's way. It can't be the player's way in that league. So, yeah, the Patriot way is a fraud. Fraud. It's Bill's way. But in that sport, that's the way it has to be. If you make it the player's way, you're porked. And you may win every once in a while, but you're not going to win consistently at a high level because that sport is not conducive to it. You know who else used to negotiate contracts on his own and was a huge sticking point his whole run through? Lombardi. Lombardi used to, it was notorious the way he negotiated contracts with players, and now he held it against players. And again, I just think it's sort of a condition of that sport, and that's just the way it is. But it's totally true. It's Patriot way is a complete fraud. Ted hit on something to me that, you know, always stuck out to me as well, and that is the OTA business. You know, this is a singular obsession of mine. So when Ted said this, it hit home with me as well. Number two, Jimmy, the real breaking point there with Gronkowski, Brady, Belichick, the whole thing.
It sounds like such a kind of overblown idea, I think, to fans. But when I tell people that, you know, not going to OTAs is the biggest kind of public display of defiance that Gronk and Tom can do to Bill Belichick, I'm speaking from experience, and it is. And it's a slap in the face when they don't show up for OTAs. And I that probably was the nail in his coffin as far as really – Bill being nice or accommodating, or, you know, that did not probably sit well with Bill. And so he was miserable. He was absolutely miserable playing for Bill Belichick. And that's all, that's exactly what I heard in that press conference. And I could tell that was how he was feeling regarding playing. He wanted to play football. He just didn't want to play for Bill Belichick anymore.
Okay, it's good stuff from Ted in that interview this morning. The OTA thing, you know, for a rank-and-file player, you've never heard me. I mean, look, I think they all should go, okay? But when it's a rank-and-file player who has not been treated well contract-wise or has had a back-and-forth with the team, you've never heard me really go off on, you know, Gronkowski for missing OTAs, which he did, or other players for missing OTAs, which they have. The quarterback is different. The quarterback has to go to passing camp. And so I've been on that totally, but it is, it's important. It's important to Bill. It's important to all these coaches. And when you don't go, that's akin to saying no to Bill on a contract. It's akin to just saying no to Bill, period. And as we all know, when you say no to Bill, that's it for you, no matter who you are.
Oh, totally. Look, and again, the way he says it there, like, you know, to hear a guy that played for Belichick just articulate or verbalize it the way that Ted did there, you know, believe me. So again, if fans don't want to take it from members of the media, I get it. You have a former player saying, listen, I'm telling you, them not going to OTAs, ooh, Belichick had to be pissed. Pissed. And I don't think it's beyond Bill to hold a grudge on that stuff.
Okay, let's just hear one more since we have time. This whole fraudulent thing about, you know, Bill treats everyone the same. You know, he's just treating Brady the way he treats everyone else. That's another one. That's another myth. That's another fallacy, which Teddy sort of blows apart here. This is the longer cut, so maybe we'll stop it and start it or cut it off at some point in the middle. But number three, Jimmy.
And here's the thing. Both of those players, Gronk and Tom, that we're talking about regarding this, you know, just the conflict there, I think the culture catching up to them. Both those guys are very – I mean, obviously, they're the most, you know, decorated players at their positions, right? And so it's kind of one of those things. I think they just thought, you know, look, we've won multiple, you know, Super Bowls. We are both Hall of Famers. We deserve to be treated probably a little bit differently than everybody else because of what we've been able to accomplish. And Bill, here's the thing with Bill, and a lot of people, this narrative kind of drives me crazy a little bit, is that it's always business with Bill. This is how he's always been. He treats everybody the same. That's not necessarily true, okay? He does have his guys, okay? He identifies. Bill Belichick is hard and as much of a curmudgeon he is and as difficult as he is to play for, okay? He understands he has to have allies in the locker room. He has to have his guys that he knows are influential, that he knows can be good mouthpieces in the media, that can preach his message. He can't completely – you know, isolate everybody on the team. So he has his guys. I think he favors certain guys as far as, you know, contracts. I think there's some guys that get more favorable contracts than other guys. So I don't think he treats everyone the same. I think it's astounding to Gronk and to Tom is that Bill treats those two guys to some degree, because Tom did have some liberties extended to him that a lot of players didn't with Alex Guerrero, et cetera. But for the most part, you know, Bill treats those two guys, the most decorated players, a lot like he treats the rank and file on that team. And I think that's just what's very difficult for them to, you know, for them to kind of, you know, take at this point in their careers with all that they've accomplished at this point.
So that is something, you know, Bill, as much of a curmudgeon as he is, as Ted says, knows he has to, there's a political game there at some point. You got to have the locker room. So you got to have your guys. You got to have your allies. And he's definitely had them over the years. You know, guys that he took care of on contracts. And, you know, Bruschi, McCourty's in that category now. Hightower's in that category. The freaking kicker, Steven Gostkowski, somehow was in that category. You know, he's definitely had them over the years. Isn't it something? Isn't it amazing he didn't make Brady one of those guys?
Yeah.
I mean, you seriously. Know
but maybe that's why he did it, is because it's too obvious. Right? It's too obvious. And that, well, he'll kiss up to the quarterback, and then maybe that creates, I don't know, and I'm just speculating here, Mike, you tell me, but maybe that then creates some resentment from other guys on the team toward the quarterback. Whereas if the quarterback is an ally of theirs and they're brothers in arms on it, they bond together. It's like the, you know, the old Herb Brooks approach, that you make yourself the common enemy to most guys in that room and they will bond.
Well, I think Bill's got that going for him for sure. I think he nailed that one. All right, so I just thought that reaction from TJ this morning was really good. You want to weigh in on that? You can. Draft thoughts, you can. Your calls right after these words.
Felger and Matt. Never be left out of the conversation.
Never, not once.
Never, not once.
Never, not once.
Felger.
Good God, man. Have some pride.
Matt.
The guy's psychotic.
98.5 Sports Hub.
Stop it.
We actually got together about 2 months ago, and we rarely talked about what his decision was going to be, where I'm at. But we did talk about for 1 second. I told him that we talked just real quick, like, hey, like, you know, it's kind of getting that fire underneath me again. I told him, and I said, I said, I'm definitely interested in your decision that you make. I mean, I didn't put any pressure on him. I said, but if there's a right opportunity out there and you go somewhere and the opportunity is right, even if you go back to the Patriots and I feel like the opportunity is right, there's a possible chance that I will definitely love to reconnect. And that's where the conversation started a little bit. And he was all fired up and juiced up about it. So that was something pretty cool at the moment. And in the end, it happened over time, which is pretty neat.
So that's Gronkowski yesterday with, boy, a bunch of half-truths. You know, conversation 2 months ago. That's where it all started? 2 months ago. That's where it all started. He said, we rarely talked about where I was at, what he was doing, but we did. You know, we spent 1 second on it a couple months ago. Like, give me a break, dude. This was in the works for a long time.
Yeah, like just 2 years.
And just listening to him yesterday overall, he is brutal. And also proof that the Wonderlic means nothing. You know, he got a 32.
What?
Yeah, I had to go look that up. Gronkowski scored a 32 on the Wonderlic.
Holy crap.
When he I don't believe that.
Process, I remember the free agent process. I you know.
Was it a was his Wonderlic like scratch and sniff?
Yeah. With crayons.
Yeah, seriously.
Like Legos.
Yeah. Hands down, I love playing for the Patriots, but hands down, it was tough playing for them too. Hands down, it was hard, but it got me right. Hands
down. Sort of the result, you coming back to the league?
You know, I would have definitely looked at the opportunity for sure, hands down.
Maybe you just can't read a book by its cover, Murray. You never know.
He is football smart, so, you know, maybe that's how it applies. But a 32 on that Wonderlic, I don't know.
Oh, way. Yeah, I took one over the weekend. I don't know if I told you guys this. I actually took one.
Oh.
So, and I got a 27.
Okay. Wow, that feels low for you, Maz. Right.
So let me just tell you that one of my questions about the Wonderlic is do they cater to them for the industry you are, you know, headed toward? Like, I think I took one that might have been for people in the business world. I don't know. But, you know, it felt harder than it should have been. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, you credit you with being wicked smart. That's just sort of average, isn't it? 27?
A little above average.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, back to your phones on everything. Thomas in Holbrook. Hi, Thomas.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Just wanted to talk about the Patriots draft. First of all, I think if Tua falls, I think you got to trade up and take him or sit at 23 if he falls to 23. But besides that, I definitely trust Belichick taking defense over offense. I think his first-round picks at defense are far superior to his first-round picks on offense. And I think Murray hit the nail on the head that Kenneth Murray is a guy for the future, the next Dante Hightower, and I'll hang up and listen to you guys. Have a good day.
Okay, babe. Yeah, the whole thing, the old saw with Belichick, his reputation is the farther away from the ball, the more trouble he has.
Right.
Receiver, corner. He's been decent at safety, I would say, but, you know, he's just that way. I certainly think those are safer picks in there, too, you know, because you can cover for those guys and you know, I just think there's more of a sure thing. I don't want him going corner. The hit miss, the hit rate there for him is wretched. For most people, it's wretched. It's just an impossible position. I think they're pretty good at that spot anyway. That's the only position. I don't want to say only, but that's a position that if he goes corner, I'd be like, God, please no.
Yeah, if they stick at 23, there's, you know, like three positions that they pick I'm going to be just livid at. And corner is one of them. Running back is another. I saw a mock today from, I think it was Ian Schrager of NFL Network, had them trading with the Ravens, moving back a few spots, and taking the running back from Georgia. Another running back from Georgia. If that happened, I'll die. And also,
God, that'd be like a worst-case scenario.
And I know it's deep, but if they took another wide receiver in the first round this year, I'll scream.
Mike in South Boston. Go ahead, Mike.
All right, there's one thing they need. They need a sizzle. Sizzle is what they need. T. Higgins, get rid of Harry, get rid of Stephon Gilmore, get me a first-round pick next year, a second-round pick this year. That's what they got to do.
They got to trade Harry and Gilmore. I'm not trading to kill Harry. And Gilmore has no trade value. I don't want to say no trade value, but limited trade value. He's 30 years old, wants a new contract, and is already paid near the top of the scale. I don't think Gilmore has any trade value.
I mean, they're not going to rip anything apart. You know, they've already done enough of that. I mean, to me, it's now about Bill, like the scenarios like that, and look, to each his own. But to me, you're talking about, yeah, let's move Gilmore, let's move Harry, let's draft it. Like, Whoa, slow down. How about just a simple move or two?
Here's Mike in his house on Brady. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, well, it's not really on Brady. I just don't understand, like, the animosity directed at Brady and Gronk for not being able to deal with Bill anymore. One spent 20 years with him, which is the longest anybody has ever spent with him. The other one spent a decade with him, and then they just couldn't deal with it anymore. And imagine being Brady, and he has to, like, scrape and claw for a contract every year. And then out of nowhere, Devin McCourty just is the highest paid safety in the league year after year after year. He's in Bill's office chilling with Bill. Bill's, it's like, I got to tell you, I don't know. And I mean, Murray, you guys were asking him to Google things and he was getting upset about it. And you're telling me that you'd be able to deal. I don't hear you asking Murray to Google things anymore. So obviously there was a mea culpa there. And I don't understand, like, the guy is a pain in the ass, and he does. Maybe Brady thought Belichick was slipping with all his crappy calls over the last few years and whatnot. And then one last thing, Belichick on this myth that he just drafts the best talent available. That, can we just all admit that that's a bunch of BS?
BS.
He drafted a wide receiver last year. I mean, really.
He drafts for need when he needs a player, Mike, just like everybody else. But his ego is such that he can't admit it. Like that, this is the thing that bugs me about Bill. It's like always the best player available, because if you draft for need, Maz, that's implying that you have a need, that your roster isn't perfect. And so that's like, cut the crap, dude. Cut the crap, Bill. You know, you have needs like everybody else, and you sometimes draft for need. You should draft for need. So I'm with you on that.
I'm looking at. Yeah, in an ideal scenario, you take the best player available because you're so good at every spot that you're just restocking the shelves. That's all you're doing. But now that I think of it, Murray, could you Google Jim Murray angry Google?
I did ask him to Google something in the first segment. I guess he wasn't listening.
No, I looked it up. It was Isaiah Simmons.
No, I know. I'm saying the caller says we don't ask you to Google stuff anymore. No, that's not true.
Murray, look that up, will you?
Listen, more than willing to Google.
So why am I on the players for not putting up with Bill? Because it's an all-time situation. It's not like they're walking away from some a-hole who goes 8-8, right? They're walking away from some a-hole that gets the absolute best out of them as players and the team as a team, to the point where they've won more than any team in the history of the sport. So that I do. I'm sorry. I do. I expect the players to put up with a little something more than they would somewhere else, because the achievement is so damn high. And I thought Brady was that guy. I thought Brady was that guy who could suck it up, take the hard coaching, take the curmudgeon, take it all for the sake of winning, because I thought he was all about winning. But it turns out he's not anymore. He's not all about winning anymore. He's about a little something else, and that disappoints me in Brady. It does. And before we go too far with him having to fight and claw for a contract, he's taken a little less, but he hasn't taken a ton less. Like, he's taken half of what he could make. He's maybe taken 10% less than what he could have if he maxed out. Don't go too far with, you know, Brady scraping two nickels together. He took a little less, not a lot less.
Okay, so Mike, my only question, though, to you regarding what Brady became, and there's no doubt, Brady changed. He did. He changed. Don't you think it's kind of amazing that it took as long as it did?
Yes, I give him credit for putting up for it as long as he did. I do, and I've said that a million times. There's a lot of quarterbacks nowadays who would not do it. There's no way Aaron Rodgers puts up with Bill Belichick for 20 years. Roethlisberger, no shot. The Manning brothers, no shot. I think there's some who would. I think Russell Wilson would. I think there's other guys who would. But I think there's a lot who would not have put up with it, and Brady did. And for that, he deserves a lot of credit. I thought he'd be able to finish it off. But apparently, you know, no, he didn't. We will continue.
I mean, less than 20 years with that guy is like dog years.
No, it's true.
Know, really.
It's true. And it probably left a mark. So we continue with your thoughts on all of that. I do just want to weigh in quickly. We mentioned it yesterday briefly about the NHL getting closer to coming back. I thought there was some interesting stuff reported about what the league is looking at. And we'll get to those items right after Murray's update. And again, there was a move already made by the Patriots today. If you haven't heard, details right now with Murray.
It's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
Clearly, we can play into the summer. Clearly, we can play next season, which we intend to do in its entirety, starting later. And so with a lot of timing options, we have a great deal of flexibility, and we're not going to rush anything. We're not going to do anything that's crazy. We're going to try and do something under the circumstances at the time that is sensible.
So Gary Bettman, I'm with John McClain, Hockey Night in Canada up there on Sportsnet. And I think there's some movement here at the NHL. I think there's movement in sports in general. Like, we've been on this for a while, but I think like every day, every week, everything I hear leads me more to believe these leagues are coming back. And they're coming back in empty stadiums, and they're going to figure it out, and they're going to finish off their seasons, and they're going to play. And we're going to get basketball and hockey in the summer. And for Gary Bettman to say, clearly we can play into the summer, like, that debate's over. They're playing into the summer, right? Like, he's saying it. We can do it. Clearly we can play into the summer. Clearly we can start next year later. So, like, I think those two things, Maz, are signed, sealed, and delivered. Like, they've already decided we can play deep into the summer, and we're going to start the next season later. And that's, yep, that's like been decided. Now it's when and where. And he's going to get into this here, but it was reported that the league has given up on the idea of neutral sites, which I think is being misrepresented. No, no, they're staying with neutral sites. They're staying with neutral sites. It's just they're NHL arenas that are neutral, right, sites. So maybe, right, some teams will be playing in their building. But I think that headline has led people to believe, oh, the Bruins are going to be playing in the empty Garden, and the Rangers are going to be playing at MSG in an empty MSG, and Buffalo is going to be playing in there. No, 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 no. They've just, instead of neutral sites in Moose Ball and Timbuktu in North Dakota and Manchester, New Hampshire, the neutral sites are going to be NHL buildings. And they've already apparently narrowed down three of the four divisions. Like, they were saying that each division would get one building. They sort of regionalize it. And it would be Vancouver for the Pacific, Minnesota for the Central. The Metropolitan would go to Carolina. And they still haven't determined the Atlantic, the Bruins division. And I do wonder, Murray mentioned Florida a couple weeks ago, and we laughed at him, Maz. I do wonder if Florida's on the board for the Atlantic, because Lord knows they're open for business. That,
hell yeah.
That governor down there, like, hell yeah, play ball. So they'll have a good shake from the government there for sure. So the where the Bruins would go is still up in the air. But they've eliminated 20 of the 30 cities in terms of sites. And you got to think, given the hotspot that Boston and Massachusetts is and has really become, that it doesn't feel feasible that Boston would be that site. But be that as it may, that's what they're doing. They aren't going to Moose Ball, and they aren't going to North Dakota, but they are going to a neutral site.
Yeah, the way that they wrote this and reported it, it's just a more sensitive way of saying we're not going to these barren wastelands that you've never heard of.
Okay, but to me, the why part is interesting and telling. So let's just sort of go through this here, Jimmy. Give me number two on the locations.
I've read in the paper that they're looking at one location. Among the scenarios we're looking at is potentially as many as four, because we need a lot of ice. And we've also concluded, and I know there's been a lot of rumors about this, we can't play in a small college rink in the middle of a smaller community, because if we're going to be centralized, we need the back of the house that NHL arenas provide, whether it's multiple locker rooms, whether it's the technology, the procedures, the boards and glass, the video replay, the broadcasting facilities. Those are the things that are in place in NHL arenas, and that's what we're going to ultimately need if we're going to come back in a centralized basis and play multiple games a day.
Okay, so they're talking about these neutral sites that are just NHL buildings. So they're still neutral sites for the majority of the team, but coming back and playing like 2-3 games a day and having these games broadcast. And so when he says the reason we can't go to Moose Ball, it's not because of Moose Ball. It's because, and I say Moose Ball, Saskatchewan, North Dakota, these, you know, middle of nowhere is what he wanted, right, to say, is because they need multiple locker rooms, because you're going to have teams rolling in and out of there per day. They're all going to be broadcast. So you've got to have the infrastructure, and not just like the press boxes, but the hard wiring for it, all these things that the NHL buildings have. You need to have the back of the house. And that to me is fascinating, Maz, because you know what this means? This means they looked at Moose Ball, Saskatchewan. They looked at North Dakota. They started going down the rabbit hole of, okay, let's go there. Let's start to model out what it would be to set up there. And they went to the broadcast partners, and the broadcast partners say, well, this is what we need. And the operations people looked at and say, well, this is what we need. and they determined that Grand Forks, North Dakota didn't provide it. But it shows you how hard they're looking. And so, like, this is the evolution of it. Okay, we're coming back. We're playing in empty buildings. Let's look at North Dakota. They looked at North Dakota. The back of the house doesn't work. We need an NHL building because we need all these other things. All right, now let's start looking at that. And everything they're doing is trying to model the league and these sports back on the field, not the other direction. And that is just, to me, just another indication. This is coming. This is coming back. It's just, it's just a matter of where, when, and what exactly it's going to look like. Let me just continue, because he said a couple other interesting things. Follow up. Number three, Jimmy.
Well, let's continue with that for a second. You saw Elliot Friedman, I'm sure, reported that you're looking at four cities connected to the NHL divisions versus the neutral site proposals.
Not necessarily divisional based. It'll be four cities if that's the route we go on. By the way, all of this is contingent. Nothing has been decided. This is just part of the modeling I talked about, mm-hmm. where we're making sure we're prepared for any eventuality. Maybe it'll be two cities. It's not something that we can predict right at this moment, but this is part of the contingencies. It doesn't necessarily have to be by division, although the centralization may be by division, but the particular location could be anywhere that isn't the hot spot and has what we need, both in terms of the arena and having practice facilities, because if you bring in seven or eight clubs to a particular facility and you're playing lots of games on a regular basis without travel, there does need to be ice for practice.
Okay, so think of that. Not a hot spot, has multiple sheets of ice for not just for games but practice, and so that narrows it down, right? I mean, that can't be Boston. They have the ice, but it's a hot spot.
Correct.
I don't know if Florida qualifies. I don't know if they have enough practice sheets out there, down there yet. I don't know. But, you know, so, I mean, you can start to narrow it down. Is that why Minnesota qualifies? Give me one more. The locker rooms. He kept going back to the locker room thing, number four.
In addition to everything else, we need four NHL-caliber locker rooms, because if you're going to play three games in one day, you got to be moving things around. We've got to make sure that we're taking the appropriate sanitizing procedures after a team moves out under this, you know, COVID-19 era. So there's a lot that would have to be done. And frankly, our buildings are the best equipped in North America to deal with what our needs may be if we go this route.
Yeah, I don't know if the viewer would realize, but a lot of your dressing rooms, you can actually lock down, sanitize, you know, they heat them right up and kill all germs. So there's
and again, you know, people tend to focus, oh, we want to play in big arenas for crap. No, this even presumes if we're not playing with fans in the building. This is really more about the back of the house, and there are no better equipped facilities than NHL arenas.
So they were looking at North Dakota, but they don't have the facilities. They don't have the back of the house. Four NHL caliber locker rooms. So you think about this, Maz. It's either got to be a building that is shared with an NBA team where the NBA team's not playing, right? Because that's how you would get your extra locker rooms.
Correct.
Or like, say, Minnesota is apparently one of the teams. I bet you that rink probably hosts, like, schoolboy hockey tournaments in the, you know, in Minnesota, which are huge. And they probably have multiple dressing rooms for hockey that, you know, it's not shared with the basketball team, but I bet they have those schoolboy tournaments there in St. Paul, and those, so they had probably have all those locker rooms that would fit. This thing that he said, you know, and John McClain jumps in and says, people don't know, you can lock them down and heat them up, and are there locker rooms that you can, like, I don't know, lock the door, seal it up, and, you know, open up a faucet, and it's sort of automatically disinfect. I mean, do you see what I'm talking about?
Yeah, no, that's news to me.
Like, what is this? The Jetsons? Like, does that? Have you ever heard anything like that, Maz?
No, I haven't, Mike. And look, I didn't take it the way you did. I mean, I suppose it's entirely possible. You could probably put something in to be able to do it that way. I took it as seal the doors, send in a crew, have them completely fumigate the place, and then get out and put the next group in. Like, you know, but I think that The word you used was infrastructure, and that's the right word. And if you think about it, it makes sense. Mike, it also tells you they've run models. Like you say, they're looking at it, and maybe I'm saying the same thing.
Yeah, no, but
they've
look
run
at
models and said, you need ships passing in the night here. So not only do you need four teams in the building so that when two are done, they leave, the other two play, and two new ones move in, you need the same type of latitude for broadcast crews if you're going to do that. They can probably use the same cameras, but they might not be able to use entirely the same workspace.
To me, it's just the details of it. You know, the detailed nature of the things that he's talking about. shows you they're just, they are modeling everything, and they're going to hit on something eventually, and they're going to do it. And they're just trying to narrow down exactly what works and exactly what they need. And that level of detail is what tells me that, you know, what it is. And that whole, and I won't pay you the last piece, but, you know, he said, ideally we want to finish the regular season, which, good. And I don't want this expanded playoffs. I want to finish the regular season. And the way they do it is they play three games a day in one building. And, you know, each team has like, whatever, 8, 9, 10 games left. And they just wrap up the last 190 games on the schedule like that in 4 or 5 different buildings across the country. So get ready for some matinee Bruins closing out the regular season in July. How about them apples? I think that's coming from like Buffalo or wherever the hell they end up, you know, for this division or this region. But I found that interesting. So we just added that to the conversation. We'll get back to your calls in our long commercial-free segment next.
Boston's home for sports, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Mike Felger, Tony Maserati, making your afternoon commute better.
Throw some, Felger. How about a mea culpa? You are wrong. Running backs do matter.
Or worse.
Yeah, I wouldn't pay him.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Your stadiums are going to be the way they've been for the last 100 years. No, I know, but your stadiums, as an example, sports, going to be the way they used to be. I mean, I told one of the owners, he said, do you think I should take out seats? I said, no, you shouldn't take out seats. We're going to have it the way it was. We're going to be back. This virus will eventually be gone. And if it should show up in the fall, we're going to put it out very fast. We have great people. We're going to put it out very fast because we've learned a lot. We've learned a lot about how to deal with this. And we'll put it out very fast.
Meanwhile, the commander-in-chief keeps pushing it. Which I'm glad for, honestly, because I want sports back. And so they have that going for them.
We're gonna snuff it out like a campfire.
He's goofy to listen to. I mean, true. But, you know, he's if these leagues are on the fence about it, they know that they have the complete support of the federal government to do everything they can to get back. So that's a powerful incentive for them. That's a powerful backing for them.
I think it's a need, Mike. They have to have it.
Yeah, definitely. You're right. And so, like, you know, that just continues. But, you know, interesting to the point where, because we also have talked to that eventually fans are going to start coming back in the buildings. And at first, it'll probably be with social distancing measures. And so how do you do that? We talked about the Alex Speer column on Monday and, you know, sitting 6 feet apart and rows apart. And owner actually asked Trump, should I take seats out, you know, to facilitate that? And Trump tells him no, but, you know, it's going to be akin to that. Have you seen this redesigned airplane idea with the airplane seats? There's a redesign there because the airplanes are going to have the same thing. You know, people are going to want to start traveling and they're going to open back the travel, but they'll want to, you know, do some form of social distancing. So every other row or every other seat so there's this, you know, this model out there where the middle seat is facing backwards and there's like a plexiglass around it, like a little bubble, like bubble seats almost. And you wonder if the stadiums are going to go through with something like that as well. I mean, I can't see it. For 60,000, 70,000 seats, 50,000 seats, it feels like way too much. But all those conversations are coming. But to me, the first thing is get them on the ice, get them on the floor, make it a TV show, and then you burn the next bridge when you get to it.
Yeah, so, and look, I'm sorry, Murray. The encouraging thing to me, too, is after, you know, we were going through that NHL stuff, it feels to me like they are running simulations, which is really the right way to do it. And that's hardly a revolutionary concept, but you got to sort of simulate the whole day, see what type of stuff would pop up, and then wonder, you know, can we address it? Are we in a building or a place that can handle that? Which, Mike, they're doing the legwork. They're doing the legwork, which tells me that they're moving along.
Okay. To me, that's the headline from that whole thing. Your thoughts on it all. Mike and Mathewin on the draft tonight. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi, at 23, I want the Pats picking Xavier McKinney. And if not, I just want them trading back out of the first round. Try to pick up as many bodies as you can. And Belichick has at least had some success drafting in the mid round. So just give him more. Oh. I think they need bodies on the line, and they need bodies on the D-line and that linebacker.
Okay, Xavier McKinney, safety, Alabama. He did not land on the Felgram-Mass big board, so I haven't spent much time on him. This is Murray's guy. Yeah, playmaker, Murray? Playmaker.
Xavier McKinney?
Yes.
No, that wasn't my guy.
Oh, I thought he was.
Kenneth Murray is the guy.
Kenneth Murray, I'm sorry. So that's the linebacker.
Yeah, yeah.
Xavier McKinney is a safety out of Alabama. There was someone. I thought we talked about him in the first hour. I'm fine with that. I'm fine with safety, but I don't want this deep center fielder. You know, I mean, and I just.
It's not really a need.
I agree.
Well, playmaking on defenses, speed on defenses, a box safety, you know, an upgrade on Pat Chung, someone who's a hybrid. I picked up my draft magazine here. Xavier McKinney is the latest entry into positionless defenders coming up from the college ranks. McKinney not only played a number of roles, but also did in the Nick Saban defense. He's at his best coming down into the box and attacking. He was used as a nickel linebacker often at Alabama. Okay, 6'1", 205, which I don't know how you're a nickel, dime, or any kind of linebacker at 205. That's a safety. But fine. You know, I mean, I don't care what you call him. The Patriots need some speed, sideline to sideline playmaking. I don't care if you call him a safety or a linebacker or a nickel guy or whatever the case may be. I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that kind of pick if that's what this guy is. We've got Brian in Salem. He's up next on Tom Brady. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Felger. So 2 points for you. You repeatedly always say that you don't have to come here to win. So why couldn't that be the reverse with Brady departing? And then secondly, if you compared the rosters, basically the Bucs, to the Pats of this coming season, how do you not think that Brady leaving dictates that winning is still important to him?
Okay, those are good questions. Winning's still important. I'm just telling you it's not the most important thing. It's still on the list. You know, but it used to be for the first, 17 years of his career, it was winning and then everything else. Now it's like, well, TB12's number one, and the wife's in my ear, so she's like number two, and the family's number two, and then the football, three, it's on the list, it's important to him, but is it the number one thing? If it's the number one thing and everything else takes a back seat, I do think he's with Belichick. Now, because you say, you know, Tampa's a better team, so couldn't you say it's about winning? Yeah, it's a better roster, but what does that mean? You know, the Pats have proven here that they don't need the best roster. They need the combination of Belichick's coaching and Brady's quarterbacking, and it puts them right there every single year. So I don't care what the Tampa roster looks like. You can't make the claim that Brady's going to Tampa over New England to win. I don't buy that. I don't think that's the case.
Oh, definitely not. I mean, again, you could pick other organizations ahead of Tampa Bay if you wanted to win. And look, maybe Brady wanted to. He wanted to pick San Francisco. They just weren't willing to necessarily do what it was going to take to get him there. But there's no way Tampa Bay is a win-first type of place. It's just not.
Okay, we'll reset our top draft thoughts and your thoughts as well. What do you want him to do tonight, folks? And you can weigh in on the NHL stuff as well. Get to it after Murray's 90-second update. No commercials. He details a move the Patriots have already made today.
Visit Plain Ridge Park Casino this spring for all the playoff hoops and hockey action and the return of baseball. They've got the biggest screens, the best food and drink, plus they're giving away Penn Cash bonuses and prizes to Penn Play Rewards members. Not a member? Join today by downloading and registering for the Penn Play app from the App Store. Unlock all the fun, including a chance to win up to $2,000 in Penn Cash. All this and more. Make Plain Ridge Park Casino your spring sports viewing headquarters. Must be 21 plus. Play it smart from the start. Live chat at GameSenseMA.com. Hope is here. 800-327-5050 or gambling help. HelplineMA.org.
There's always a reason for better health, and here's Carlo with his.
My program with Awaken 180 actually started when my daughter was born, and at that time, I was over 300 pounds. I felt I owed it to her to better myself and my family, of course. And I'll never forget, it was my fourth week. I came in, and my goals for that week were not met. And they found the positive in everything, and that was the biggest thing for me. Awaken 180 has provided me confidence, not only in my day-to-day eating, it's my day-to-day role as a father, as a friend. And that's something that for the longest time, I didn't have.
The benefits are endless after losing weight with Awaken 180. Carlo dropped his 84 pounds, and he did it in under 4 months. Scale results, life results, with the solution for weight loss online at awaken180weightloss.com.
Be honest, wouldn't you like to play more golf this year? As the State Golf Association for Massachusetts, Mass Golf is ready to help, and they want you to become a member. By joining, you'll automatically get a handicap index from the USGA, access to play exclusive private clubs through Mass Golf events, and a bundle of additional benefits. Best of all, it costs just $55 to join. visit massgolf.org and make today a golf day.